Morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Just great. And how about you?
Good.
I just like to try to word it differently every week.
Welcome back to another episode of Wicked
Mysterious.
I'm your host, Danny.
And I'm your host, Katie.
And I don't know what today's episode is.
13.
Is it season 2, episode 13? Yep.
Yep.
Wow.
It's my lucky number.
I also like that number, but I'm more of a fan of 3, but I also like 13.
That's right. I love it.
All right. So
what do you got for us today?
My cat's puking. I hope nobody hears it. Well, Zach fed her like a little bit of like hamburger on the bun. I'm like, she can't have grain.
Oh, bread. Yeah.
Yeah. Because she'll throw up everywhere.
Yeah.
Anyway, so she's puking again. You can't hear it, can you?
Poor babe. She's on like, no, I can't. She's on like such a special science diet. And then He's over there giving her cheeseburgers.
I know. And cheese. Like, yeah. She waits at the door at night.
I could see cheese, but.
He sprinkles cheese on her head and she like.
Oh my God. It. That is so cute.
Okay.
All right.
So I've got a hefty episode today. Hefty, hefty, hefty.
Hefty.
This is a big one. And
big boy.
It's a good one. Ooh. And I hope you like it. I think you'll like it. Don't know if you've heard of it. So here we go. Kecksburg, Pennsylvania is a small village located 30 miles southeast of Pittsburgh and is known for more than one paranormal event. Located in the Allegheny Mountains, Kecksburg is part of the Chestnut Ridge. In December 1892, the Pittsburgh Post featured an article about a haunted farmhouse. Some of the activity at the farmhouse included banging noises on the bed frame in the master bedroom and the forceful ejection of anybody who tried to sleep in the bed of the man that residents claimed haunted the home. This area is known for its very own Bigfoot and strange, mysterious lights. But arguably the most interesting and infamous paranormal event didn't happen until 1965. This event is often referred to as Pennsylvania's Roswell. A monument dedicated to this event still stands outside the Kecksburg Fire Department. This monument is a model UFO that was used in a 1990 episode of Unsolved Mysteries. It was later given to the town as a gift from the show.
Cool.
So let's get into it.
Ooh, I'm excited about this. I do not know this. I've never
heard. Okay, good. There is so much information online. I could have gone forever, but we're currently sitting at 7 pages. So I decided to wrap it up. But
yeah, yeah.
On December 9th, 1965, a brilliantly large and bright ball of light was seen in the sky across the lakes region of the United States. First seen over Ontario, Canada, the fireball took a trajectory from the northwest to the southeast. But as it passed over Lake Erie, the fireball then turned 25 degrees and changed trajectory over Cleveland, Ohio, before then taking a 90-degree turn over Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. The people in the Pittsburgh area claimed to have heard a sonic boom. Then, over West Virginia, it took another U-turn, almost 180 degrees, continuing north before crashing in Kecksburg, Pennsylvania. Some witnesses state that the object seemed to purposely make the last U-turn north in an attempt to avoid Bear Rocks. Bear Rocks is an area of high elevation made of rock outcroppings located in northeast West Virginia. The path of this object spanned 6 states as well as Canada and had thousands of eyewitnesses. NASA immediately claimed that this was a meteor despite the hundreds of witnesses who claimed that it moved very slowly and appeared to be gliding, both of which a meteor cannot do.
Yeah, meteors and take like a sharp 90-degree turn, meteors?
Meteors also do not make 90 to 100 degree turns.
Right.
The fireball streaked across the sky, it was able to be seen for hundreds of miles in all directions.
Of course, NASA would say it was a freaking meteor.
This goes really deep into NASA, and it's pretty fucking interesting.
Awesome.
So we have quite a few eyewitness accounts. Brothers Rob and Ray Landy were playing outside at dusk when they saw the object streak by overhead. Rob says he knew whatever this was had to have crash landed because of the angle they saw it falling at. He knew this 100% was not an airplane. His brother Ray explained that he and his brother were in awe and dumbfounded as to what the object could be. They were so scared they turned their bikes around and rode home as fast as possible. In fact, multiple accounts came in from children playing outside. It must have been a warm day because, remember, this was in December. So I checked the weather for December 9th, 1965 in the Pittsburgh area, and it was actually pretty warm. It was almost 50 degrees.
Love it. Wow.
At 4 p.m.
Wow.
And the sky was clear that day. Cool. One child was playing in a creek when he saw the object fly by less than 200 feet above him. Okay. A man named Bill Billy Bush. A man named Bill Bully Bush.
Oh, okay.
Who lived just outside Kecksburg was working on his 1964 Corvair in his driveway as he listened to his CB radio. So he's in his driveway listening to his CB radio, and he hears people in Ohio talking about the fireball that they saw fly through the sky. And then a few minutes later, he heard a hissing sound. So he looked up from out from underneath his car and watched as the fireball did a 180-degree turn in front of him before crashing into the woods. He hopped into his car and drove toward it, stopping on what is now known as Meteor Road in Kecksburg. He exited his car and was hit by the strong odor of sulfur. He walked down the hill into the ravine and saw the object laying on the ground, which he states the object had taken the tops off the trees, and the object was still sizzling as he approached.
Oh, shit.
He looked at the object for a whole 15 minutes before he started wondering if it was going to explode, and then he drove home to get his 7-year-old son.
Damn. He wanted his son to see it?
Yeah, he wanted his son to see it.
Yeah. Wow.
I'm going to send you a YouTube link of his firsthand account.
Oh, cool.
Color of it was like a burnt orange. It was burnt from the front clear to the back. And I could see this ring around the back of it. And it looked like Egyptian writing on the back of it. There was no windows in it, no seams, no rivet marking. It was just a solid piece.
Yeah, wow. I mean, I know that's a reenactment, but that figure is very odd. Definitely nothing like we've ever heard of for like a UFO, right?
It's not like anything we've heard of, no.
Yeah, so cool.
So Bully Bush returned to the scene with his son, but by the time he got back, the whole area was cordoned off by the military.
Whoa.
So witnesses continued to come forward even a half century later. In 2005, a woman named Francine wrote to somebody named BJ, who I believe was a UFO researcher for the website UFOcasebook.com. She wrote to him and said, quote, "I was on some site about the Kecksburg sighting. It told the story and asked if anybody had an opinion about it. Well, I lived in Pittsburgh at the time that this occurred. Brian Vike wrote about his experience, and when I read it, I was floored. I was at the drive-in movie that night with my boyfriend. He wanted to get there early to get a good spot. I can't remember how long after we arrived there when it happened. All of a sudden, the sky lit up. What the heck is that? I asked. The sphere or ball-like object was very low in the sky and was burning and had a long, fiery tail. The color to me had a greenish color to it. I would say it was, in my view, for at least 4 seconds, maybe 5 seconds. But of course, in those days, we thought it was just a meteor. And the next day it was confirmed on the radio that that's what it was. After all these years that have passed, it's truly amazing to me how much of it I can still remember. Thank you, BJ, and getting this computer is wonderful. I know I can relate what I've seen and hope what I will see in the future, I can relate them to you and everyone else out there that is interested in the UFO phenomenon, Francine," end quote.
Cool. So yeah, she saw it and was this all this time just thought it was a meteor until recent.
Yep. And she mentions the tail. There was a lot of talk about that after the fact because the contrail that it left in the sky was visible for 20 to 30 minutes after it crashed.
What?
Yeah.
What? That's a very long time.
Yeah.
Cool.
So the object crashed in a ravine in the woods in Kecksburg, Pennsylvania, about a half mile from the farm owned by a woman named Frances Kelp. In fact, the Kelp children, who were also playing outside that night, witnessed the fireball overhead and saw it crash there just outside their farm. They described it as a four-pointed star and witnessed smoke coming from the woods. At 6:30 p.m., Mrs. Kelp then heard on the radio that the state police were looking for information on a downed airplane in the area, which prompted her to call into the radio. This radio station was WHJB, located in Greensburg, and was only 11 miles away. She spoke with John Murphy, a radio station reporter, and explained that this was not a plane, but she believed it was a piece of a plane that was smoking. John Murphy, in turn, contacted the Pennsylvania State Police, and only 2 minutes later, she received a call from the Navy, who told her that she had to watch the area and make sure nothing strange developed, and if something happened, to call them back on the number they provided. She questioned why she would call them and not the fire department, to which the naval officer responded, "You call us, we will notify them." Thinking this quite strange, Frances then hung up and called one of her friends, but almost immediately the operator came on the line and told Frances that she had an emergency call. It was the state police telling her they wanted her to lead them to the crash site. They arrived almost immediately before the sun had even gone down. Remember, the sightings all over this town happened at dusk, so things are already moving very quickly.
Quick, yeah.
The state trooper arrived with two men in plain clothes who Frances said did not identify themselves. The smoke had dissipated, and Frances pointed to the edge of the woods where the object had crashed just beyond the tree line. The two men walked toward the woods with a box with a wand on the end, likely a radiation detection device. The state trooper told Frances that he knew the object was nearby because they could detect the radiation. He also cryptically told her that when they take the object away, no one will see it. John Murphy, the radio reporter who took the initial report from Mrs. Kelp, also arrived at her home and interviewed both Mrs. Kelp and her children. Some sources say that the Pennsylvania state troopers were involved in the initial search and that their names were Paul Shipko and Carl Metz. Murphy claims that when the search was completed, the Pennsylvania state police told him that they were calling in the military and that they were unwilling to provide any more answers. Murphy then called the captain of the state police headquarters, who told him that he needed to come to the barracks to get an official statement from police. But when he got there, the office was already swarmed by military. The official statement was, quote, "The Pennsylvania State Police have made a thorough search of the woods. We are convinced that there is nothing whatsoever in the woods," end quote. So put a pin in John Murphy, the radio guy, because we're going to come back to him later.
Okay.
So, meanwhile, other Pennsylvania state troopers were led by two Kecksburg firefighters through the woods to a high point overlooking the ravine and the crash site. Upon their arrival, they noticed a blue flashing light emitting from the area where the object crashed. The troopers brought the two firemen back to the fire department after closing off the area. At this point, more than 25 volunteer firefighters from the surrounding towns had descended upon the fire station. They decided to split up into teams and were each assigned an area to search, still believing at this time that it was a downed aircraft in their little farm town. James Romanski Sr. was a volunteer firefighter and describes hearing on the radio that the aircraft was located in the ravine. He and his team rushed through the woods toward the site, and what he described is completely unbelievable. I'm going to play this clip for you from Unsolved Mysteries because I think it's important to hear his firsthand account.
Yeah, I love it.
Here was this humongous metal object half buried in the ground, about 6, 7, 8 foot around, and it was every bit of 8, 10, 12 foot long. And to me, the object looked exactly like a fresh acorn that you pick off of a tree. There was no wings. There was no motors. There was no propellers. There was no identification whatsoever that were identified as an aircraft that I would know. there was a bumper on the bottom part of it. On that bumper, there was what I call, it looked to me like the ancient Egyptian hieroglyphics. It was markings like stars and shapes and figures and circles and lines. And what it was, I don't know. To this day, I've never seen anything like it. I've studied the ancient Incas. I've studied the ancient Aztec Indians. I've studied the Egyptians. I've looked at pictures of Russian writing. I've looked at pictures of Polish writing. I've looked at pictures of Hebrew writing. Nothing. Nothing that resembles it. Chinese writing? No.
Wow. That thing again. So now my question is, this object that lands and is in the woods, right? The, like, all these accounts, people are witnessing this same object that's landed, but none of them are witnessing it at the same time.
Yes. Obviously. There was a few of the witnesses talk about a crowd already gathering because it was on the radio.
Okay.
And people saw it, and like kids, and I'm sure word spread fast that like it, hey, it landed in our town, and they all started like rushing out. But
And I mean, back then, what, 1965, you said, like, everybody was outside playing. Nobody was inside, right? Nobody was inside watching fucking screens.
Yep, I wrote that. I was like, can we bring back playing outside?
Right?
Maybe we'll see more shit. But
truthfully,
that's Bully Bush sounded like he was alone when he saw it.
Yeah.
I think he might have been the first to actually see it, but he was there because the fire department was looking for it. They didn't know. They went out in a search to find it. But Bully Bush knew pretty much where it was because he saw it crash. And he drove out there like immediately.
Yeah.
So I think, and he, it sounded like he was alone. So I think he was the first person, and he didn't tell anybody for over 20 years. It might have even been longer.
Well, I mean, he
told nobody.
Yeah. He probably couldn't even like wrap his mind around what it could be.
Right. He thought it was some sort of bomb.
Yeah. And he would sound crazy if, you know, he thought it was a spaceship.
Right.
Oh, wow. And I think it's really like what that guy just said. It's super credible that he's studied so many different writings and like languages and stuff. And the writing on it has, you know, there's no correlation to anything that we know of. That's fucking crazy.
Yeah. I thought he was very believable sounding.
Yeah.
All right.
I really have a hard time like not believing people when they talk about sightings of things like this, because I just can't really understand what they would gain from it.
Right.
You know?
And with this one in particular, there are so many witnesses.
Right.
And even the witnesses that didn't see the object itself after it fell, after it crashed, they still, like, to this day, insist that military was there. And that's a whole thing that we'll get into. But there's hundreds of witnesses that saw the military there.
Cool.
So as you heard, he describes the object as acorn-shaped, bronze-colored with a bumper and a distinct script that was unrecognizable to him despite the decades of searching for something similar. The script has often been described as similar to hieroglyphs, and the object was anywhere from 9 to 12 feet tall and partially buried in the ground by impact.
I believe it.
A man named Bill Weaver was interviewed for the Unsolved Mysteries segment, and he said that he had heard about the crash landing on the radio. As he drove through Kecksburg that night, he saw cars parked alongside the road, and the crowd of people had gathered by the field near the ravine. He claims that he, too, witnessed the blue pulsating light and that he was not able to catch a glimpse of the object itself, but he and many other people had witnessed a box truck approach the ravine. Men in hazmat suits exited the truck and then carried a 5-foot cube toward the site. All of the people there believed that the crash object was too big to fit inside that box.
Yeah.
Nobody knows what it was for. Nobody knows if there was something in it when they took it back out.
Right. Did they recover like a body and put it in there?
I don't know.
Yeah. Wow.
The military officials quickly cleared the scene and prevented any more new witnesses from accessing the area. Bill Weaver claimed that he was threatened by a military officer that if he did not leave, they would impound his car.
That's a fair threat.
A lot of people did speculate if they were putting a body of some sort in that cube, but this acorn thing It is a UFO technically because it's an unidentified flying object, but it's right. not a saucer, and it was right. not being piloted, they don't think.
Right. It almost reminds me of like something breaking off of something, you know?
It seems like a capsule.
Yeah.
So I wonder if there was like information in it or something, or if maybe it was like being remote controlled because it did make a turn, but there were no windows. There were no motors. There was no propulsion at all.
True. So, wow. I mean, that's the thing. There was no windows. And there was no door that we could see, right?
Nope.
I mean,
there was no rivets at all. It was completely smooth.
So cool. Yeah. I mean, at first, my first thought was like that it like broke off of something, but then I totally forgot that it did make all those turns and shit. So yeah, it definitely seems like it was being, controlled somehow.
All right. So then the military comes. And they take over a farmhouse in close proximity to the crash. It was a home owned by the Hayes family. Lillian Hayes claims that they made numerous phone calls from her home, which never showed up on her phone bill.
Weird. That's weird.
They even took over the Kecksburg Fire Department building as a temporary command center.
Okay.
The firemen were not allowed inside their own building. And we're all outside when a Jeep with a red light on it drove by, followed by a flatbed truck with an object covered by a tarp.
Okay.
A 10-year-old boy also witnessed the flatbed carrying the tarped object drive by his home as he peeked out his bedroom window.
What the fuck could it be, the tarped object? The object? They removed it and they were taking it away?
Yep.
Oh my God.
He claims that the object was preceded by a large military convoy, and the object under the tarp was the size of a Volkswagen Beetle.
Holy shit, that's a good perspective to put it in.
The poor people of Kecksburg have no idea where the object went from here.
Wow, they must feel robbed.
Right? After the Unsolved Mysteries segment aired in 1990, an Air Force officer came forward to say that he was asked to patrol a gate at Lockbourne Air Force Base sometime after midnight on December 10th, 1965. He claims that his orders were to watch over the truck, which had a cylindrical object on the bed that was covered by a tarp. He was told to shoot anyone that got too close to it. He was not given... Yes.
Like kill?
Kill. Shoot and kill anybody that came near it.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
This is majorly big.
Yes. It gets crazier. Wow. If you can believe that.
Wow.
He was not given any other information about the object other than that it was en route to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. This base is also located in Ohio and is rumored to be the location that crashed UFOs are brought to. A second witness came forward in 1990. This witness claims that they were a building contractor who was tasked with a delivery inside Wright-Patterson Air Force Base and that they snuck a glimpse into a hangar. And what they saw was men in hazmat gear inspecting a bell-shaped object. Both of these witnesses, that information comes from that UFOcasebook.com and is repeated like verbatim elsewhere online. But I was not able to find the original source for either of those accounts. So take that for what it's worth. The official story was that this was a fireball type meteor called a bolide. And the national media just accepted this at face value without much question. The people of the small village of Kecksburg, though, believed the object to be some sort of capsule, either man-made or alien, but they did not necessarily believe this was a ship or that it was piloted by any kind of beings inside it. The object had no windows or engines of any kind. Some of the other potential answers were that this was space debris. However, this was debunked because at the time, NASA had just launched the Gemini program, and that ran from 1961 to 1966. The Gemini program was for NASA to be monitoring any space debris. So they either missed this completely or it wasn't space debris.
Mm.
Another rumor was that this was a Soviet satellite or debris from Cosmos 96. Cosmos 96 was a Soviet craft and its mission was to explore Venus, but it experienced a launch failure and never left Earth's orbit. James Oberg, who was a space journalist, researched this explanation and discovered that the Soviet craft was nowhere near the U.S. during the time of the Kecksburg crash. Furthermore, NASA was not only watching for space debris, but they were also watching what the Soviets were doing. So if this object was either of those things, NASA would have known about it. And it would have been a very simple solution and easily provable. NASA claims to have no record of any space debris at the time of this crash.
Of course not.
And so now we're going to move into how ridiculous our government is.
Love it.
So Stan Gordon, UFO researcher and investigative journalist Leslie Keene, both requested documents from the government agencies under the Freedom of Information Act. In the Unsolved Mysteries episode, Stan Gordon states that he requested documents from the Air Force and NASA. The Air Force record shows that there was high military interest in this object, including information being requested from the Air Force by NORAD, the Houston Space Station, the Air Force Command Post, the Pentagon, and the Office of Emergency Planning. So they all of those places wanted to know what this was, and they were asking the Air Force.
Shit.
The Air Force document that they received back from FOIA claims that the search for the object was fruitless and called off at 2 a.m. on December 10th, 1965, which we know is untrue. And I think it's like absolutely ridiculous that they can gaslight or try to gaslight this many eyewitnesses.
It's probably always been happening, right?
Yeah,
but always gaslight eyewitnesses. But yeah, this
is a lot. People. That's a lot of people.
A lot of people. And they probably like a little part of them believe it, like start believing the, you know, because who's going to like not believe NASA when they're giving you like fucking expert opinions, you know?
Right. The Air Force document also says that this was likely a meteor. In fact, eyewitnesses that night were able to identify what squadron of Air Force was at the scene that night. So the activity log for that squadron for the month of December 1965 was requested by that Stan guy by FOIA. The activity log shows absolutely nothing from that day at all. Leading researchers to believe that this was a top secret mission and was purposely omitted.
Of course.
And it gets worse if you can imagine that. In fact, Leslie Keene, the investigative journalist, sued NASA over their lack of response to her FOIA. She discusses the fact that the government will say that their request isn't specific enough or simply that they can't find any information, despite her providing the date, time, and location of when this happened. She specifically asked for the phregology files from the 1960s and was told by NASA that these files were lost. So the phregology files are a listing of every object that's ever fallen from space. And they were specifically looking for information on what happened that night in Kecksburg. This lawsuit started in 2003 and took years. NASA even at one point tried to turn in unrelated documents in an attempt to get her off their back and tried to get the lawsuit dropped, but the judge would not allow this.
Wow, this woman's a beast.
Yeah, she's really cool.
Yeah.
So this, I thought, was so clever. Finally, in July 2021, the Black Vault had a very clever idea of petitioning the government for all the documents regarding Keene versus NASA and received 220 pages, which included information on Project Moondust. So this is a quote from Wikipedia. Project Moondust is a covert project by the United States Air Force during the Cold War that existed at the Air Force Missile Development Center at the Holman Air Force Base. The aim of the project was to recover objects and debris from spacecraft that survived re-entry through the atmosphere back to Earth and exploit the discovery of Soviet hardware when it temporarily fell into American hands, end quote. However, according to NASA, their documents regarding the Kecksburg incident were transferred to the National Archives, but found out in 1996 that the National Archives had marked these files as lost back in 1987. Or maybe they were destroyed, they say.
Right.
They don't know.
That's what it said. Yeah, they don't know.
It was marked as lost in 1987, but they didn't find out till 1996 that they were marked as missing.
Right.
But also, they just destroy shit.
Of course.
Because document it? So that's funny because back in 2005, Right before the 40th anniversary of the Kecksburg crash, NASA said on record that this was 100% a Soviet satellite. How would they have known with 100% certainty that this was a Soviet satellite if all of the files were lost 18 years earlier?
Yeah, that's right.
And as Vice.com points out, that's also not what they said back in 1965 either.
Right. They said it was just the media, right?
Yep. Vice.com was able to find a quote from a press release from 1965. It said, quote, "Investigations of photographs and sightings of the fireball indicated its path through the atmosphere was probably too steep to be consistent with a spacecraft re-entering from Earth orbit, and that it was likely a meteor in a prograde orbit from the vicinity of the asteroid belt and probably ended its flight over Western Lake Erie," end quote.
Interesting. And over Lake Erie, too. That's cool. Yeah.
And Leslie Keene makes a great point that if it was known to be a meteor, the military would not have needed to behave so secretively.
No, that's absolutely true. Yep.
And they mentioned pictures being taken that they looked at or whatever that they investigated. There were people there that were taking Polaroid. I don't know if it was Polaroid, but they were taking photos like the townspeople, and those were all confiscated, all of them.
I bet the whole town was questioned, like, you know, interrogated about it.
Yeah. And I'll come back to that in a second. But what makes the story of the Kecksburg crash so intriguing is that if it was in fact space debris, it likely would have burned up as it fell through the Earth's atmosphere. It seemed to fly slower than an airplane and did not appear to have propulsion again. And furthermore, it glided without wings and turned without an engine or a pilot.
Right. There's no way. Like, how could anybody, even for like a split second, fall for the fucking fact that that could be space debris?
Right.
Who?
And meteors fall all the time and you don't hear that they're like UFOs. Nobody says that.
No, definitely not. I mean, like you said, after it was gone, there was still, you could still see like kind of similar to like chemtrails, I would imagine.
Yes, exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, come on. All right. And then I guess like the whole, even the space debris does that now? Leaves fucking marks in the sky? Like, come on.
Well, I mean, if it was on fire, regardless, it could have left a trail, but NASA had
15,
a whole...
Well, yeah. Yeah, that's true.
NASA had a whole program that was dedicated to watching for space debris, and they did not catch this. They didn't even have record of it. Because it wasn't space debris.
right, exactly.
I don't think. So remember the lady who lived on the farm and she called the guy on the radio, the radio investigator,
yeah.
John Murphy?
Yeah.
So John Murphy, the director and reporter for WHJB Radio, he was highly interested in this story as soon as he started receiving calls about it. Employees of WHJB reported John being extremely excited about the object in the woods as he had mountains of information from voice recordings he took of police during the initial searches to interviews of Frances Kelp and her children and even pictures of the object. He and his office manager, Mabel Mazza, wrote an entire documentary called Object in the Woods.
Ooh.
Murphy was passionate about this project and excited for its highly anticipated release. Just a few days before its premiere, two men in suits arrived at the radio station to visit Mabel and John. They identified themselves only as government agents and asked if they could speak with John in a private room.
Oh, don't do it, John. Don't do it.
After a 30-minute meeting, Mabel says that John had completely lost his excitement for the project. He did not want to discuss the project or the meeting with her. Stan Wall, who was a DJ at WHJB, described John as afraid, stating that he couldn't talk about it and that he wanted to be left alone. John's ex-wife, Bonnie Milslagle, described...
Where do these names come from? I swear.
I know. Described his behavior as completely out of character for John.
Yeah.
She said that this was the story of his lifetime and that he felt as if he hit the jackpot and that it was extremely strange and out of character for him to abandon something he felt so passionate about. She even claims that John told her these government agents confiscated his evidence, some of it, including pictures he took of the object.
Oh.
Nevertheless, John decided to run the story anyway, but when he did, it was not the original story he wrote with Mabel. He refused to tell any of his employees why he changed the story, but did tell the audience, quote, "We regret that part of the program had to be censored and other parts of the program had to be cut out entirely. This station has not been contacted by any official agency of the state, federal, or local government in connection with this program. We received other calls early tonight from some other people who said that they changed their minds now at the last minute and did not want the statements they had made over the past weekend to be used in this radio program tonight," end quote.
Whoa.
So Mabel, his employee, she said John was never himself again and that he refused to discuss the meeting with the government officials or his decision to change the documentary ever again. In 1969, just over 3 years after the UFO incident that changed his life, John was hit and killed by a car as he crossed a highway in Ventura, California.
I would have bet that was coming. Yep. That is so sad. Do you think that if he didn't publish it, he would have been taken out? Like if he didn't go forward with, even though he didn't release any, you know, things that he wasn't supposed to release, but.
No, I think they killed, I don't know if he was killed or not, but I think if he was killed, it was because he had a platform, whereas the eyewitnesses didn't, aside from Unsolved Mysteries.
And he still went forward with, you know, putting out something. It wasn't everything, but it was enough to bring it to people's attention.
Yeah, but I don't know what it ended up saying. He cut a lot out and he cut out all the eyewitness accounts and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
So at that point, it's just a story. It's just made up, you know?
True, true. There's nothing, no valid evidence, really. I still think he was taken out, though.
Yeah, probably, because he was an eyewitness. He saw it, too. He saw it himself. And that's why he was so excited about it, because he knew it was not a meteor.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm sure they don't go in and say, hey, so if you're going to release this on your platform, you know, just make sure you don't include X, Y, and Z. They probably were like, we don't want you to ever talk about this again.
Right.
That's what I would think.
And they probably threatened his family and stuff. And
yeah.
And if anybody was to come forward later, it probably would have been him.
Yeah.
Kecksburg commemorates the 1965 event with the Kecksburg Volunteer Fire Department UFO Festival. For one weekend every summer, the fire department hosts the fair, which includes a parade, a UFO store, and a UFO hot dog eating competition.
That is so cool.
Though it's been nearly 60 years since that mysterious night, the people of Kecksburg have not forgotten what they saw.
Wow. No, they never will.
Nope.
Nope. That this story is amazing. I can't believe I've never heard it.
I know.
It's like probably one of the biggest like eyewitness testimony stories to actually seeing the object.
Yeah.
Nothing like we've ever been described before, right?
Yeah. So, and when we did the Antarctica episode, I did mention this, but when I mentioned it, it was somebody had said that they saw an acorn-shaped object on a flatbed truck drive by. And I don't know if I confused it or if the documentary I was watching confused it. But in the Antarctica episode, we talked a lot about like Nazi Germany having this technology. And they specifically mentioned acorn-shaped UFOs. But when I researched it for this episode, like, are there other... All I could find was the Kecksburg one. So I'm pretty sure that the Nazi Germany supposedly had acorn-shaped UFOs or they were seen over during war. When I went back to find it again, I couldn't find it. So
yeah, of course.
I don't know.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. So great story. Would love to go to that festival.
Oh my God, that's so cool. It kind of reminds me of the Loveland Festival that they have. Mm-hmm. Like, I love that
the Frogman.
Yeah, I love that, like, the community still carries on and, like, makes fun of it. Not fun of it, but, like, you know, enjoys.
Yeah. And I'm sure it's, like, so, if I were them, I would feel like it was an important part of the community because they were gaslit and it's fucked up. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
To be told that you're crazy and these are the experts, but the experts don't even have the documents that they're supposed to have to prove themselves right. And then to say in 1965 that it was a meteor and then say, oh, we lost the records, but we know it but was actually a Soviet satellite. Well, how do you know you lost the records?
Yeah,
so those saying that.
If it was a Soviet satellite, those records would be like locked. There would be no reason for those records to not exist. They'd right. be locked in. They'd be, you could find it everywhere.
Especially now because yeah. it was yeah. so long ago. It's not.
Cool. Such a cool story.
Yeah. I loved this one. Cool. I do have listener mail.
All right. Good.
This person's name just says J-Lo. I hope it's not the J-Lo because if you don't know, I actually hate J-Lo. And I'm here for her downfall.
I didn't know that. You hate J-Lo. You hate Christina Aguilera. Who else do you hate?
That's it.
Okay.
Taylor Swift. Sorry. Oh, that's no. Sorry, but I do. And it's not because
we just lost fans.
Huh?
We just lost fans.
That's okay. It's not because I hate Taylor Swift, like, because I just hate her. I don't like not having the choice in what goes into my ears. I feel that way about advertising too, but I'm especially sick of Taylor Swift. Just seeing her constantly, like, go away. We get it, okay? Like,
we totally get it. We're fucking, yeah. Long time ago, we got it.
Yeah, I'm tired of being bombarded by Taylor Swift and her fans. But, and I'm sorry.
Swifties.
Yeah. People can like what they like. I hope we don't lose fans over that, but.
Yeah, we like what we like and we're, you know.
Because so, what I like is good.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
Agree. Agree.
So okay. J-Lo writes, hi, ladies. I love you and your podcast. Have you heard of any ghost animal stories?
Ooh.
I used to see a ghost German Shepherd in my bedroom as a kid. We didn't have a dog, but my mom said maybe it was my dad's from his childhood. It turned out that he had a poodle, so that wasn't the case. Once I had a sleepover with my friends and saw glowing dog prints in my room to the bathroom toilet. I guess the ghost dog needed a drink. I told my 10-year-old my stories and he was wondering if other people had similar experiences.
Whoa.
So I have not, I can't think of a time I've heard of that other than every time I go to like a psychic or medium, they always talk about my dog that I had when I was a kid. Always comes up. Always.
Wow. I'm sure they do like stay with us, you know, our pets.
Oh yeah. They're people too. They're souls.
Yeah, for sure. They're part of the
around.
Family. Yeah. I think it's so cool, J-Lo, that your 10-year-old is interested in if there's other stories out there. Mm-hmm. So your kid is pretty cool in my book.
Yeah.
He'll be a Wicked Mysterious fan someday. I love it. But yeah, I also haven't had any experience with ghost animals, but we would love to know if anybody else has, so let us know.
Oh, I do have a somewhat related ghost animal story.
I have a reincarnation animal story.
Oh, neat.
With my own animal, with one cat that passed and went into another cat.
Oh, that's cool.
Uh-huh.
I didn't
and
know that.
The cat had a near-death experience when the soul of my other cat went into this new cat, so I'll save it for another episode.
Wow.
But it's incredibly, there is absolutely no way to explain it other than she is Binks. Widow is Binks. What's your story of a ghost animal?
I was just looking it up.
Oh, I thought it was a personal story.
No, at the Lizzie Borden house, which is local to us. Mm. I went recently and they have a ghost cat that lives in the house. And if you pay an extra exorbitant amount of money, you can see the basement because it's not included in the house tour. It's so ridiculous. But
yeah, it is.
There's a black cat named Max there in the basement. You can see his footprints, like he stepped in paint.
Aww.
And but it's a ghost cat.
I love it.
So
I love it.
I think it's Max. I just tried to Google it, but I don't see much.
That's cool.
I can't remember the exact story, but yeah. Yeah.
We definitely hear stories of people seeing like ghostly apparition animals on cameras.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, that happens. And one time I was in Florida and there was a black cat on my camera. Like I was in Florida.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah. And it was probably a neighborhood black cat, but I like to think that it was like the ghost of Binks still hanging out, you know, because both of my cats were in the house. I called the person that was supposed to be watching my cats, Shane, and said, what the hell? My cat's outside. And he was like, they're both right here. Either Shane lied to me or because we know eventually my cat really did get out. Right. So we don't know. probably not a ghost cat, but still cool to think it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Could have so just been another neighborhood cat too.
Yeah, that's I just, you know your neighborhood cats, you know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah.
And like I didn't see any like this, but
yeah.
But that was nice of you, J-Lo, to write in. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, J-Lo.
We love getting our listener mail. We love it.
Yes. So yeah, if you haven't had any experiences with ghost animals, let J-Lo and her son know. We'll read it for you. And if you're listening on YouTube, you know the drill. Like and subscribe.
Yes, all of that. And that's it for housekeeping, huh?
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Yeah, that's
cool,
all I got.
Cool. All right. Well, I just want to let our listeners know that the promise I made of taking the gummies, the edibles, I did do today. And that's probably why I sound like an idiot. And that's also
why she forgot what a hanger was.
That's exactly why.
I'll probably cut that out.
Yeah, I think you should because you reset it. So, but no, I definitely had a hard time just getting through this episode. I don't know if you saw Danny, but I had to like lay down a few times.
I saw.
Yeah. And, in my edibles are legal. So don't come at me, people, saying I'm a bad person.
Yep. So we're in Massachusetts.
All right.
Okay.
So
love you,
that was a really good episode. Thank you for giving it to us.
You're welcome. And, like I said, super interesting. Lots of documentaries out there. Lots and lots and lots more information out there. Lots.
Yeah, it's a really good topic. Yeah, you could keep going.
Yep, forever.
Cool.
It went by kind of fast, though.
It did. It was great. I enjoyed it. All right, well, we'll see you next Monday. And hopefully, did you tell the fans about how we're not uploading at midnight anymore? Did you tell them? Or
No. So okay. We're not going to upload at midnight anymore for a couple reasons. YouTube has now integrated with RSS feeds. So if you know anything about podcasts, they come from like a feed. And, anyway, I don't have to upload a second video now to YouTube. So it automatically uploads to YouTube the second it hits the RSS feed. And then that happens at midnight. So that means that all of our people get alerts at midnight. Or 1 a.m. And that makes me feel bad. So, So we're going to change that. Also, everywhere says, do not release at midnight. You will fail. So now we're not going to release at midnight anymore. I haven't figured out what time, but.
Yeah, but it'll still be Mondays. So.
Yeah. So by the time you hear this, you will already know that it didn't release at midnight.
True. True. And we hope you had a wonderful Zombie Jesus holiday.
Yes. Happy sugar holiday. She stuck to me. The cat's...
Lala made an appearance.
Yeah, she wants to sit on my head, so...
I think she thinks she's an anaconda. Well, I don't think anacondas sit on heads, but they...
No, they wrap around the neck.
Wrap around the neck. Cause...
Did you see that jump she just did?
Yep.
The whole room shook. All right.
All right. Let's get out of here.
All right.
One, two, three.
Stay mysterious.
Mysterious.
Yeah, I didn't even say it right.
Why can't we say it? What did you just say?
Mysterious.
Do you want to keep it? Stay mysterious.
No.
All right, ready? Stay mysterious.
Oh, we did it.